Well, let's look at the evidence. Has there been electoral fraud? And let's look at another question. Have we become blindly loyal to a man?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to give you data today, and we're going to give you passion today, and you get to give your own data and your own passion. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. We're going to start by just taking a little time to examine charges of electoral fraud. Are there valid reasons for being deeply concerned that an election was stolen in front of our eyes, or is this bogus? Is it just nonsense? And you get to weigh in, 866-34-TRUTH, with your own take. And then want to dig a little deeper, get beyond data, get beyond information, and talk about the condition of our hearts. I'm going to play a clip from a talk I did last night on Facebook. I was so burdened. I was so grieved. It was Nancy's birthday yesterday, and we had some of the family over, just fun night, having a meal together and then playing some games. And it was late at night. She was already in the bedroom, and I was doing some work, and she sent me a link. And when I looked at the link, and then I posted a response to this particular link, which I'll tell you about a little bit later in the show. And then I started seeing some of the comments coming in on Facebook and on Twitter. I was so grieved. I just went to the room. I was crying. I said, "Hon, what's become of the church? What's happened to us?" Then went on Facebook and shared with a broken heart. So we're going to play some of that for you as well. Okay. Basically, you don't have a lot of people like completely in the middle here, right? You don't have a lot of people completely in the middle when it comes to the elections, right? You're either pretty convinced it was stolen or pretty convinced it's nonsense to say it was stolen. Right, you're either saying, look at all the data, look at all the evidence, this is clear as day, how can you say if? You say, look, this court case after court case is being thrown out, there's nothing to it. Now, there are some that aren't sure or don't have an opinion, but most have an opinion. Now, here's the problem, of course. You've had Donald Trump from way before he was president questioning elections, saying things are rigged. Back in 2012, he's talking about that. When Ted Cruz beat him in Iowa in 2016, you remember what happened? Because I was cheering for Cruz then, right? You remember what happened? That he said it was rigged. Cruz stole it. And he cheated and so on. Remember that? Yeah. And he had said repeatedly, you know, 2018, any gains, it's rigged. And then he was saying for months, the only possible way he can lose is if it's rigged. How could he say that? On what basis? So on the one hand, you could say he's been setting everything up, as we've talked about that and read some of the quotes from years past. He's been setting things up that no matter what happens, he won. That no matter what happens, at the end of the day, if it's a baseball game and the score is, you know, that team 10 and your team 0, no, we actually won because the umpires, if they called the game right, we would have won 100-10. Like, where's the reality check in that? On the other hand, it's like there seem to be irregularities. And come on, you talk about a perfect storm. You're talking about a perfect storm. So you have five states, key states, and it's late evening on election night, and Trump is winning in all of them. And I'm looking on these charts, and it's showing the needle, you know, strong probability that he's going to win these states, you know, based on votes to come in and so on, because they have their way of calculating and which counties have come in and which outside ballots have come in and so on. It looks like he's going to win. You wake up in the morning, or you go to sleep a few hours because you can hardly sleep because of the elections. You see a few hours later, it's like, what? Just shit. How did that happen? How did that happen? What happened? I mean, why did they stop counting? So it raises suspicions. Now, if you've been listening to the show, my official view is I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I don't have degrees in statistical analysis. I'm not an expert on election fraud. I've not analyzed what's happened in other nations. Here, who am I to tell you what actually happened? You know what I'm saying? Who are you to tell me? I was talking to a friend of mine, a Washington insider, yesterday, and he said, look, you know, Trump's team, they're spending tens of millions of dollars investigating every possible lead, and the greatest analysts and money can buy looking into things and so on. If there are issues, they're going to be finding them. It's not going to be, I have a YouTube video or I have a theory, and that's going to uncover the whole thing. So my official position remains, I don't know. All right? But I've never really gone through the evidence for fraud. In other words, I've never taken time on the air with you and said, well, let's consider the evidence for fraud, right? We should want truth. Agreed? And my colleague James Robinson has a passionate appeal on the stream today saying, shouldn't we all agree that for the sake of truth, for confidence in the electoral process, regardless of whether it's President Trump with four more years or President-elect Biden, and that becomes the reality, right? Regardless of who it is, if there are genuine concerns and charges being raised of fraud, with Trump over the weekend even saying, yeah, maybe the FBI was in on it and the Department of Justice was in on it, right? Serious charges. And many Americans questioning the outcome of the election, for good reason or for bad. James said, is there a way we can slow down the process and make sure everything is investigated and the courts can look at things? And then say, okay, there is evidence or there isn't evidence. And then either say, it's nonsense. The election was not stolen. Nonsense. Joe Biden is the duly elected next president. Or to say, there was massive fraud to try to overturn a fair election and steal democracy from the people. We should want truth. Can we all agree on that? Every side, we should want truth and a fair outcome. So I have not presented the evidence that others have presented. And it's not so much, you know, dead people voting or an allegation here and there. I mean, a lot of those would be more minor. A lot of those would be not enough to swing things in a particular direction. But there's an article that was posted on the stream. Oh, when was this? This was posted November 19th, and it's Michael DeRosso, who heads up a strategic firm which actually looks at ways that America can be attacked and undermined, etc. And his article is entitled, Show the Graphs, Mr. President, Industrial-Level Fraud Hidden in Plain View. And he says the mainstream media have summarily rejected President Donald Trump's claims of election fraud as unsubstantiated and called the election for Vice President Biden, although recounts, possible vote audits, and litigation in numerous states are still pending. Now, this was November 19th. And he said more since then, but this article kind of captured things well. So this is, what, 12 days ago. Even Republicans have expressed skepticism about the president's claims. They have called on him not only to assert that voter fraud has occurred, but also to present evidence of such fraud and, critically, to show that enough fraud occurred to make a difference in key battleground states. So in his article, he talks about the spikes in votes for Biden. So there was a hearing now with legislators in Pennsylvania last week, where they say, yeah, there's a sudden spike. And it's like Biden got 570,000 votes and Trump 3,000. It's like, how does that happen? And how does it suddenly shift like that? So in this particular article, for example, the author says, late Tuesday election night, vote counting inexplicably stopped in critical battleground states, including Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. At the time, the president had sizable leads in Wisconsin and Michigan and an overwhelming 14% and 700,000 vote lead in Pennsylvania. Then first at 3:42 a.m. and again just after 6 a.m. Wednesday morning, two huge batches of new Biden votes were suddenly tallied in Wisconsin and Michigan, respectively. At the time in Wisconsin, Trump had been holding a commanding 3.6%, 108,656 vote lead with over 3 million votes already counted. Moreover, he held a consistent lead of 4% or more for over 7 hours since the polls had closed. Then a sudden spike in the number of Biden votes completely wiped out the Trump lead in a split second. This spike was produced by a huge jump of 168,542 votes, 5% of the state total, that included 143,379, or fully 85% of the batch for Biden. And he goes on, it's a technical article with charts and graphs, and he's saying to President Trump, just show the graphs to the people. Now, I do not have the ability to analyze the data being presented, Okay? You might say, well, it's so obvious. Maybe it is. But I've been around long enough to know that you can make a very persuasive argument of a point, and then someone else comes and makes their persuasive argument, and you go, oh, I never thought of that. Or they can say, it's been cooler this year than the last 10 years, and then someone says, no, but you're actually comparing wrong data to this. And so we have to have all the information. And obviously, people that believe there was no fraud have answers for these, but it's a very conspicuous and odd thing that voting for some reason, vote counting stops, right? Why does this happen? Vote counting stops. And then suddenly, a few hours later, you have this jump, just jump. And then thereafter, as the votes come in, they come in very evenly, just to keep Biden ahead the rest of the way. How is that? You say, well, if you analyze the counties, no, it doesn't break down like that. Okay, there's an article on the Federalist, the Federalist website, and this came out last week, and it's titled, Five More Ways Joe Biden Magically Outperformed Election Norms. And it says, surely the journalist class should be intrigued by the historic implausibility of Joe Biden's victory. They are not as curious, to say the least. So there are just a lot of things that don't make sense. Now, again, I have not come to a conclusion, and I'm trusting the courts and the prayers of God's people will bring us to a righteous conclusion. That's what I'm trusting, that if there's been fraud on this level, it will be exposed. It will be. And if not, then it won't be. All right? That's what I'm expecting. I'm simply presenting evidence. And for those who are saying there's no fraud, this is nothing, it's crazy, at least I want you to know why others are getting upset. So things that don't make sense just in the natural is that you had such a tremendous drive to vote for Barack Obama. He was such a charismatic type leader that many wanted to get behind him. And of course, the first black president. So there was a nice jump in voting for him in 2008. Many came out to vote that hadn't voted before. But for Joe Biden to trounce his numbers, I know there's hatred for Trump and a desire to get rid of Trump, but for him to trounce his numbers. So normally you have, when you have this massive victory for a presidential candidate, they have coattails, right? So they bring with them all these other candidates, Senate and House, except basically the opposite happened. In the House, you have 27 contested seats, and every one of them went for a Republican. Think how that doesn't seem to line up. These are questions people are asking. I'm presenting the evidence. We'll be right back. We're just getting started. Take your calls, and then I'm going to share from the depth of my heart with you. Stay ready.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. For those who are listening and say, well, you're just a Trump supporter, well, then they're going to be able to say, you're just a Trump basher. So how about this? I'm doing my best to be a truth teller and to sort through things together. I am not right-wing, left-wing when it comes to my ultimate allegiance. My ultimate allegiance is to truth, which means at times I'll agree with one and disagree with another. And at times you'll love what I'm saying and at times you won't. But just let's give it a hearing together. So all I'm doing now, 866-34-TRUTH, is analyzing some of the reasons that people are highly suspicious of the election outcome. We're putting aside the hundreds of affidavits that we're hearing of where people say, I witnessed fraud. But we're putting that aside for the moment. Let that play out, all right? We're putting aside whether the cases being brought to court have any validity. That will play out, all right? That will ultimately play out. What we're asking is some of the larger anomalies, some of the things that don't seem to make sense. You know, it's almost like you're looking at stats at the end of a football game, okay? You're trying to analyze. How is it, kind of watching the game and watching the field, you're watching a football game, it really felt like your team dominated the other team. And you're trying to figure out, how did it happen that you lost to them 24-17? It's like, what? Okay, let's look. We had 411 yards total offense, 300 yards in passing, 111 yards rushing, and they had 48 yards in total offense. We had no interceptions, no fumbles. They had three interceptions and two fumbles. We had a kickoff return for a touchdown, and they had a total return yard of minus one. How do we end up losing? It's like something doesn't make sense there. And if you're looking at stats, you're used to doing that kind of thing. It's like something happened somewhere. You know, you ever done that? If you're into sports, you kind of analyzing. It's like, how do I? I didn't watch the game, but it's like, oh, there was this big fumble here. Oh, there's this turnout because it doesn't line up. Got it? Okay, so in the Federalist, this article by J.B. Shirk lays out five things that just seem suspicious, unusual. So the first is 80 million votes, all right? 5 points in this article, 80 million votes. He said, holy moly, a lot of Americans turned out for a Washington politician who's been in office for nearly 50 years. Consider this, no incumbent president in nearly a century and a half has gained votes in a re-election campaign and still lost. President Trump gained more than 10 million votes since his 2016 victory, but Biden's appeal was so substantial that it overcame President Trump's record support among minority voters. Biden also shattered Barack Obama's own popular vote totals, really calling into question whether it was not perhaps Biden who pulled Obama across the finish lines in 2008 and 2012. It's being sarcastic. Proving how sharp his political instincts are, the former VP managed to gather a record number of votes while consistently trailing President Trump in measures of voter enthusiasm. Biden was so savvy that he motivated voters unenthusiastic about his campaign to vote for him in record numbers. So he's like, okay, all the surveys said there's not a lot of enthusiasm for him. And then he crushes Trump's numbers and crushes Barack Obama's numbers before that. So that seems odd, doesn't it? Okay, maybe it's an explanation, hatred of Trump. Fine. I understand. Okay. Second, winning despite losing most bellwether counties. Biden is set to become the first president in 6 years to lose the states of Ohio and Florida on his way to election. For a century, these states have consistently predicted the national outcome, and they have been considered roughly representative of the American melting pot as a whole. Despite national polling giving Biden a lead in both states, he lost Ohio by 8 points and Florida by more than 3 points. For Biden to lose these key bellwethers by notable margins and still win the national election is newsworthy. Not since the mafia allegedly aided John F. Kennedy in winning Illinois over Richard Nixon in 1960 has an American president pulled off this neat trick. And then he goes through it by counties. He says, scrolling down a bit, whereas the former VP picked up Clallam by about 3 points, President Trump's margin of victory in other 18 counties averaged over 16 points. So I think this is in Georgia. In a larger list of 58 bellwether counties that have correctly picked the president since 2000, Trump won 51 of them by an average of 15 points, while the other seven went to Biden by around 4 points. So, like, how does that work out? That seems unusual. And then, a third point, Biden trailed Clinton, except in a select few cities. Patrick Basham, a pollster with an accurate track record and the director of the Democracy Institute in D.C., highlighted two observations made by fellow colleagues, polling guru Richard Barris of Big Data Poll and election analyst Robert Barnes. Barris noticed a statistical oddity from 2020 elections returns. Biden underperformed Hillary Clinton in every major metro area around the country, save for Milwaukee, Detroit, Atlanta, and Philadelphia. Those are the four cities that were key to turning things. Barnes added that in those big cities and swing states run by Democrats, the vote even exceeded the number of registered voters. Now, these are things that have been pointed out statistically. Now, I've read some refutations, but the refutations actually seem weak. Then four, Biden won despite Democrat losses everywhere else. Oh, how's that work? Randy DeSoto noted in the Western Journal that Donald Trump was pretty much the only incumbent president in U.S. history to lose his reelection while his own party gained seats in the House of Representatives. When you vote, if all the people voting for Biden, many will just click straight Democrat ticket. Voting for Trump, click straight Republican ticket. Yet there are tons that just voted for Biden and left the others off. It's like, that's interesting. And then number five, Biden overcame Trump's commanding primary vote. In the past, primary vote totals have been remarkably accurate in predicting general election winners. Political analyst David Chapman highlighted three historical facts before the election. First, no incumbent who received 75% of the total primary vote has lost re-election. Second, President Trump received 94% of the primary vote, which is the fourth highest of all time, higher than Dwight Eisenhower, Nixon, Clinton, or Obama. In fact, Trump is only one of five incumbents since 1912 to receive more than 90% of the primary vote. Third, Trump set a record for most primary votes received by an incumbent when more than 18 people turned out for him in 2020. The previous record held by Bill Clinton was half that number. For Biden to prevail in the general election, despite Trump's historic support in the primaries, turns a century's worth of prior election data on its head. And he says, hey, Biden achieved the impossible. It's interesting journalists don't even care about that. And then this article from The Spectator by Patrick Basham, who was just quoted, reasons why the 2020 presidential election is deeply puzzling. And he said, if only cranks find the tabulation strange, put me down as a crank. And he said, hey, the moment you question the elections, you're considered crazy and so on. He goes, but hey, there are valid questions here. And he goes through all the analysis, state by state, and what we've seen over the years. And then raises, as I'm scrolling down the article, oh, is it 10 concerns? One, late on election night, with Trump comfortably ahead, many swing states stopped counting ballots. In most cases, observers were removed from the counting facilities. Counting generally continued without the observers. Two, statistically abnormal vote counts were the new normal when counting resumed. They were unusually large in size, hundreds of thousands, and had an unusually high 90% and above Biden to Trump ratio. Late arriving ballots were counted in Pennsylvania, 22,000 absentee ballots have impossible postal return dates. And so anyway, goes through all these specifics. Okay. And now data that's coming forward, they're arguing that in certain states, the only way this could work is for every vote that was received by Biden, it counted as 1.3 for every vote received by Trump, 0.7. Now, again, I don't know. I am not an analyst. You want to talk to me about Hebrew Bible, I can talk to you with some authority. You want to talk to me about interpretation of the New Testament, I can do so with some authority. You want to talk to me about Jewish apologetics, culture wars, a bunch of things I can talk to you about with some degree of authority. I can't talk about this with any degree of authority because it's not my area of expertise, and I cannot analyze the arguments either way. But there's enough evidence out there and enough things that just don't line up, coupled with, and here's where you get a toxic mix, coupled with the driving narrative of President Trump that you can't trust anybody but him, that everybody's corrupt but him, that this whole thing is rigged, that the only way he can lose is if it's rigged because he can't lose. Now you've got a very toxic situation where feelings are inflamed across the nation. What I urge everyone to do is join me in believing God for truth to triumph, for corruption to be exposed, for lies to be exposed, whether they're lies from President Trump or lies from the FBI. Let them be exposed and let a righteous election outcome come to pass. You say, who do you want to win, Trump or Biden? I want a righteous outcome. That's what I'm praying for, a righteous outcome. I voted one way, but I'm praying for a righteous outcome. Can we all join in that? Can we unite in that? All right, listen, we come back. I'm going to go to your phones, get some of your input. Then I'm going to play a very disturbing clip from Trump attorney Joey DiGenova last night in an interview, or yesterday in an interview on Newsmax. And then show you some shocking responses from Christians. Please hear me. I'm far more concerned right now about the state of the church than even the outcome of the elections. Yeah, and I say that from the heart. All right, number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. And we will get to some of your calls. If you just have a general Bible theology question, I won't be taking those today. I won't be getting into that today. All right, so general Bible theology, won't be taking those calls, but any relating to these election issues. And I'm going to share some things, I'm just telling you up front, that are going to upset some of you, but I know I'm speaking truth. I'm sure I'm speaking truth, and you can reject me for it, but I'm asking you to give me a hearing. And if you know me over the years, you know I shoot straight. I don't try to insult people. I'm not nasty. I don't get worked up emotionally, but sometimes I do get grieved. And last night was one of those times. All right, we'll be right back. Shake the nation, change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. There's a new article by my friend Al Parada, my colleague on the stream, stream.org, where he, again, raises questions about the legitimacy of the election outcome. It's just worth reading. Whatever side you're on, to at least understand. If you're convinced the election was stolen, you need to understand why others are not convinced. If you're convinced it was not stolen, you need to understand why others were convinced it was. If you want to have dialogue and insight into one another. And this is my own background. You know, as a debater and apologist, I know there are other sides to stories, and that's why I'm dogmatic on certain things and others not, all right? But before we go to the phones, I do want to get into this subject, all right? This is an interview. Trump attorney Joey DiGenova is on the air on Newsmax, and they're talking about electoral fraud. Now, Chris Krebs was the cybersecurity chief that said, under Trump, lifelong Republican, who said that it was the most secure election in American history, and posted an official statement on this and was fired for it. On 60 Minutes over the weekend, reiterated this, I guess on Sunday night, reiterated his views that it was the safest election. So obviously not a favorite of President Trump or his team right now. So I want you to hear this little exchange.
Powell tweeted out that she's going after the Commonwealth of Virginia next. What do you know about that?
Right. I know nothing about that. That's the first I've heard about it. We know there were some statistical anomalies in Virginia,
as
like there were in a lot of other places.
Yeah, statistical
and that was
anomalies.
Of the disruption that mail-in balloting is inherently corrupt, and this election proved it. This was not a coincidence. This was all planned, and you know, anybody who thinks that this election went well, like that idiot Krebs, who used to be the head of
cyber. Oh, yeah, the guy that was on 60 Minutes last night.
That guy is a Class A moron. He should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn and shot.
Joe, what happens next? The last question, what happens next?
All right, so more... Yeah, I'm going to jump in here. So this outrageous statement about Krebs, he's an idiot, Class A moron, should be drawn and quartered and shot. Okay, it's rhetoric. It's rhetoric. We understand that. But it's dangerous rhetoric. It's irresponsible rhetoric. It's inappropriate rhetoric when death threats are flying everywhere, where unstable people on all sides are ready to do crazy things. It's irresponsible. So I wanted to test the waters to see where some Christians were, some Trump supporters were, and I put this on Twitter first, Twitter, and then on Facebook. So I posted this on Twitter, and I said, if you're the world's most ardent Trump supporter, please tell me you denounce this comment from Trump lawyer Joey DiGenova that Chris Krebs, Trump's fired cybersecurity head, quote, should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn and shot. Can you denounce this without qualification? Okay, then I posted on Facebook. Facebook, you don't have the limitation in characters, so I posted something a little more full on Facebook. Can we agree that no matter who we voted for, reckless calls for violence should be categorically denounced? And can we agree to condemn this comment from Trump lawyer Joey DiGenova about Trump's former head of cybersecurity, Chris Krebs, whom Trump fired, specifically that Krebs, quote, should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn, and shot? Can you condemn this without qualification, even if you're 100% sure that there has been massive voter fraud and that the election has been stolen? Can we stand together and denounce such reckless words, be they from the left or from the right or anywhere in between? I certainly hope so. All right. So I posted that, and to my shock, I started seeing comments like this. These are from professing Christians. These are from Jesus followers. All right. I started seeing comments like this. I'm going to quote some. Treason, sedition, communism, hang them high. Did you get that? treason, sedition, communism, hang them high. This is in response. I'm saying, can you denounce this? This is reckless. This is reckless rhetoric. And I don't care what side it's from. We all denounce junk like this. You know, Kathy Lee Gifford holds up, you know, a head like it was Trump's head decapitated. Any person of conscience denounces that. Obviously. Especially followers of Jesus. No, they're supporting. Please, show me the hard evidence that Chris Krebs is guilty of treason. Please, show me. How about this? No, I agree that treasonous acts such as his should receive a very harsh punishment. He should face more than firing. Another, sorry, but being a traitor deserves death. I find your comments to be out of line. Another, there's a lot of the same type of language in the Psalms. You aren't going to censor the Psalms, are you? So you're going to compare Joey DeGenova's irresponsible rhetoric to the book of Psalms, calling for righteous judgment on God's enemies? We used to hang traitors. Qualify reckless. Civil war is at the door. Treason is punishable by death. I was so grieved. I broke down crying with grief for the state of the church. And I got on Facebook and poured my heart out. You can read my latest article on stream.org or askdrbrown.org. And then I trust me, I am going to the phones immediately after this. But I talked to Nancy for a bit. I prayed. And then I got online and shared my heart with tears and with passion about the messed up state of the church. I'm asking what has happened to people that they respond to reckless rhetoric like this by saying, treason, it's treason, hang them. It is like Trump said, he could shoot someone in broad daylight in Fifth Avenue and wouldn't lose followers. That's scary. And I voted for him twice, okay? But that's scary. And if you hate me for this and turn me off and never listen again, I'm speaking the truth. So I got on Facebook. There's a link to that in my article as well. You can see it on our Facebook page. And it's 18 minutes long, but here's, I don't know, a couple minutes from it. Let's listen.
You can say, I believe he's wrong. You can say, I think he's part of the conspiracy. You can say what you want to say, but you do not, as a follower of Jesus, come on, what's happened to us? Have we completely lost our minds and our souls? Or have we gone that far that when someone like me, who's taken flack for years as a Trump supporter and a Trump voter, who has actually lost friends, an old Facebook friend, was a childhood friend, we've known each other since elementary school. But when I'd say anything positive about Trump or defending Trump, it was too much for him, and he cut me off. Okay, that's after knowing the guy for what, over 50, close to 60 years, all right? And when I dare tell the truth, when I dare raise concerns, I become the enemy. I become a leftist. I become a supporter of BLM. I become pro-abortion. I become a Biden voter. I become a communist. I become someone sold out to Jezebel doing destruction to the church. That's what I was told yesterday for saying, hey, vote for Trump, support Trump. If you believe there's election fraud, fight and pray for truth. But do not put too much trust in a man. It's dangerous. You show me where that happens in the New Testament. You show me where Christian leaders in the New Testament put that kind of trust or faith or confidence in some man. All right? I raise a warning and a concern.
Yeah, so that's a little excerpt. You know, I raise a warning, I raise a concern, I become the enemy. Friends, it grieves me. I wasn't angry. I was grieved. I was upset. I was burdened. What's become of us? I've been watching it for years. I've been watching it. As much as I absolutely supported so much of Trump's agenda and absolutely warn against the agenda of the left and absolutely warn against the cancel culture and mobocracy and the attack on our freedoms, and I absolutely am concerned about policies, international policies and national policies that a Biden administration could introduce. At the same time, I've warned for years about looking to a man in a wrong way or mingling the gospel or marrying the gospel with politics. So this is nothing new. It's just gotten really bad. It's gotten really extreme. It really, really has, friends. So you can cut me off. You can stop subscribing, unlike, whatever, stop financial support. I'm serving God, my friends. And Paul asked the Galatians, have I become your enemy by telling you the truth? You didn't hate me or love me. Either way, I'm going to tell you the truth. And one day you'll thank me. I do what I do out of love. Plenty of things I learn, plenty of things I grow in, plenty of blind spots I have. That's where I try to stay low. But when I'm burdened and I got to speak, I'm going to speak. I got to. All right. At last, to the phones. We'll start with Jerichiah in Colleen, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Shalom, Michael Brown.
Hey there.
How you doing, sir?
Doing well.
Yeah, I have a quick question about hyper-patriotism, you know, and how America was founded upon the proposition of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and how you see, like, the left and atheistic philosophy is completely incompatible with this. But at the same time, you see American patriots who put the flag above the cross. So, I don't know. I was wondering, could there be a balance between a patriot and a Christian, or is there an unbalance?
Well, no, there should be a balance. In other words, we're in this world, but we're not of it, but we should be good citizens. We should fight for good principles. We serve like everyone else. You know, we raise our families, we have our jobs, we get involved in the system around us, but we do it as God's people. It's a matter of priorities. It's just like, say, giving financially to support the work of the gospel in your local church. Well, everything we have belongs to the Lord, so we have that mentality. Then we give a portion of it specifically for local church and missions and things like that. It's like, well, how much is too much? It's like, well, you work out the right principles, okay? It's the same with our view of our country. We want to be loyal to our country and serve our country and work for what's best in our country. But our ultimate allegiance, when the rubber meets the road, is to the cross versus the flag. That our ultimate allegiance in terms of where we draw a line and I cannot move from here is not the flag, but the cross. So, yeah, we should be good citizens, and we should be patriotic in terms of appreciating the good in America. Although obviously Native Americans and Black Americans have a different view of American history than many white Americans would. But we are appreciative of our country. God's done a lot of good through America. You take America out of the scene, and in many, many, many ways, the world is a much worse place. So I'm jealous for the destiny and purpose of America, but I understand that America itself is part of the world. It's part of the world, right? And we are part of another kingdom. So it is a matter of ultimate allegiance. It is a matter of ultimate emphasis. And what I've seen for many now, I've been watching it happen, is much more zeal for the flag than for the cross. Flag first, cross second. Trump first, Jesus second. Oh, no one would ever say that. They'd never say it. But in terms of emotions, attitude, emphasis, energy, it's going one way, the wrong way.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let's see. Headlines on FoxNews.com. Admitting dysfunction, Georgia's top elections official blasts compounding errors in state's largest county, home to Atlanta. Then, another headline, Barr. So, DOJ, William Barr, who's been a champion in many ways, standing up for religious freedoms and doing a lot of good and a powerful testimony before Congress, right? He says the DOJ hasn't found proof of widespread voter fraud. So let this be sorted out. We shall see. Let's go to Fairfield, Illinois. Pastor Corey, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call today. I've been watching the last couple weeks your comments on Twitter, your articles that you've read, and watched your Facebook Live video you did last night, this morning. And I'm in agreement with you, Dr. Brown. And I'm someone who's been somewhat politically involved as well. So I think the church does have a voice. But what I'm seeing and what we're seeing is just God is revealing where the church's heart is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with it. It troubles me that people have their eyes more on President Trump than on Jesus. And I am just as disturbed as you are.
Let me ask this. Have you been able to trace a shift over time? If I asked how this happened, would you be able to answer that with your own opinion?
I guess I have an opinion. I don't know if I have like a de facto point in history or a point. I think people have grown just increasingly frustrated of wanting to see change over time. Mm-hmm. They've wanted to see Roe v. Wade overturned. They've seen what's happening in the culture war with the church trying to be silenced and more of the LGBT given a platform. They've watched the cancel culture, and they saw someone that they thought was going to stand up and fight for them. The church did. And so they've put their hope and their trust in that. And what we're seeing now, I believe, is just it's wrong. And back in October, I was in prayer, and I felt like the Lord told me so strongly, Dr. Brown, that he is so jealous for his church. And he was sharing with me, I believe, then, that he is grieved for how much the church has put President Trump on a pedestal. I mean, we can pack out stadiums for political rallies, but what happens when we have a call to prayer? I mean, we have some, but you don't see the energy or the focus on that. And I believe it's because they're looking for someone to fight for them. And it concerns me about where that could lead in the future if we're not going that way already too far.
Yeah, I agree with your analysis. And again, it was refreshing to see someone that's going to tell it like it is and take on left-wing media and push back for religious freedoms and so on. But it exposed so much in our hearts. It really did. You know, many things. Yeah. But, you know, many things, you know, in ministry, you have a certain level of success, certain level of financial prosperity, notoriety, whatever. These things expose who we really are. Are we the same person on the other side of it? So I've said the whole time that God raising up Trump, there are multiple sides to it. One is exposing what's in the hearts of much of the church, especially in our white evangelical circles. And a lot of it's very disturbing. Yeah, go ahead, though.
So I've been watching what's happening with a lot of these legal battles with Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood and others. And Lynn Wood today on Twitter called for the president to declare martial law to get all of this straightened out. From what I've seen, I listened to your show earlier about all the anomalies, and I agree that there's a lot of strange things happening that should be investigated. What I don't know is if this goes down to a place, and I know this is maybe hypothetical, but if this goes down to a place where the president declares martial law to get all this straightened out, where do you think the church should be in all of this? Because I feel like they're trying to drag the church right through the middle of all of it.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the comment from Lynn Wood, so I can't. I'm hearing it through you. I have to read it in context. But yeah, if you're representing it accurately, that absolutely deeply disturbs me. There is absolutely no reason to call for that. And we have a system, and let's work things through properly in the system. I believe most Americans want a fair outcome in the elections. They may have strong opinions who they want in office, but if that's the case, then every Christian leader close to Trump needs to say, we cannot stand with you on this. You do not declare martial law. Again, I have to look at the whole quote in context. But let me say this one other thing. If I could appeal to the president, and I'm nobody, right? I have no relationship to him whatsoever. Even if I know people in his inner circle, they know him. They don't know me. Okay? I mean, he knows them. He doesn't know me. And they have their own voices. But I would urge him to say to the nation, I want what you want. Whoever you voted for under our legal system to be the president, that's the man I want to be the president. And if indeed it's me, it'll be my privilege to serve you for the next 4 years. And if it's Joe Biden, then I will do everything I can to see a smooth transition for him and ask you to support the outcome of the election. And if the courts determine that I'm the legally elected president, and I'm asking America to let the courts do their job. Rather than stirring more anger and lock them up and hang them up and string them up, it's irresponsible, it's destructive. Hey, thank you for the good word, my brother, and let's continue to put Jesus first, and everything else falls into context. Let us go to Laura in Longview, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
Good. I recently just got saved. I was a Jehovah's Witness for 39 years, and Jesus revealed himself to me after I cried out to God.
Wow.
And so this election was the first time, I'm 41, that I ever got to vote. So it was pretty important to me.
All right, so hang on. I know you got a question, but this is wonderful to hear. So from the age of you raised as a Jehovah's Witness. Your whole life, basically.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And it goes all the way back to the beginning. My great grandfather, his father was anointed and brought the religion to Big Sandy here in our area from Russell.
So like 100 plus years back, you're saying?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. But something was missing and you cried out to Jesus and he revealed himself.
Yeah, I had been disfellowshipped and my daughter was turning 18 and everyone from the Kingdom Hall was telling her to leave me because she has to become an adult now, and a decision had to be made. So my daughter left me, and I started realizing something's wrong with this religion. I did an investigation into the New World Translation, found out I had been lied to, and that I didn't even know who God was. Romans 3 said that I wasn't good and that I needed a savior. So I told God, you said you'd be behind me, telling me which path to take. And I cried out on the stairs of my apartment, and I said, it's time for you to come and show up in my life. And the next day, Jesus said, it's all a lie. It's just me and you. It's a relationship with me. I came to save you from your sin. Yeah.
Amazing. And so you came to be born again, have an experience with God that the Watchtower said you could not have. It was just for the 144,000.
Yes.
Know that your sins are forgiven and you have eternal life. Yes. Isn't that glorious? Praise
Amen.
God.
And I had 6 children. One is in heaven. She died at 25 days old. It's been about 10 years since she died. My 15-year-old was my 17-year-old's best friend, so they were really into the Kingdom Hall pioneering. And my 15-year-old tried to go with her, but I told her to give me a week. And in 3 days, she got saved also, and she knows the Lord Jesus.
Oh, come on. And your 18-year-old?
So pray for our family. We're trying to get my mother, father, and my daughter, Sarah, out of it. So pray for them. Keep
May
them in your
be.
Prayers because they've completely rebuked us and will not talk to us.
But God's at work. God's at work in their hearts. And your crying out in prayer is going to make a massive difference. Right? Listen, you now have a small army of folks that
Amen.
Are going to be praying that just heard what you said.
Yes.
They're going to be praying.
Yes.
Okay, so on the much more mundane level, but while we still have time before the hour is out, yeah, go ahead with your question, please.
So I was upset about the election too, but then I realized, you know, Joseph has really been in the story of Joseph. God just keeps showing it to me, keeps showing me that God meant it for good, you know, and at the end it talked about how the people multiplied and increased over those 400 years. And then over Egypt, another king arose who did not know Joseph, and he dealt shrewdly with that race. So I feel like as Christians, aren't we looking for times to get hard to that time that we're not going to know, you know, whoever the president is, he is going to come down on us at some point. Aren't Christians looking for it to not get better because Jesus said that it will go from bad to worse?
Well, let me encourage you as you're reading the Bible to keep looking at what Jesus says about all authority is given to him in heaven and earth, and that we're to go make disciples, and he's with us to the end of the age, right? That
right.
According to 1 John 2, the darkness is passing and the true light is already shining. According to Romans 13, the darkness is passing. It's time for us to wake up. Other parables speak of the harvest being the end of the age, right? So there's going to be a great multitude, both good and bad. You have other passages like in Romans, the 11th chapter, that speaks of the fullness of the Gentiles and Israel being saved. All that to say this, Laura. Number one, I'm with you in terms of I'm not putting my trust in a man or the White House for salvation. And if things come against us, God will give us grace, just as he gave to Israel and Egypt, which ultimately overcame. At the same time, I believe that the harvest will continue, that as darkness increases on the earth, so will the light. And that's why more people like you are coming to meet Jesus every day around the world, more now than any time in world history. I remind everyone, Jesus is Lord. Put your trust in him.